them. The entire family, minus the husband of one of these ladies, is also coming to that particular lake cabin on that particular weekend. And then hijinks ensue and revelations are made and farcical things happen and doors are slammed and pants are not worn. It's a fun evening of theater.
I keep my pants on.
There would be door slamming if we had a door.
Ah,
metaphorical door.
Talk to the set director on that. Chris, this is not your first play, is it?
No, this is my sixth that I have written on my own. I do one a year like Woody Allen.
One a year. And so this is your 2017 offering?
Yes. It was actually, the funny thing is, it was written in 2016. We were hoping to do it last summer. And then somebody who likes to wear green and has red hair was doing other things that she thought she could balance.
Campaigning.
And, you know.
She was busy.
She chose the betterment of all over the betterment of me.
Okay. And do we dare ask you if you are working or thinking about 2018's offering?
Yes, I have. I have a really, really bad draft of next year's play.
It's a start. It's something to work with, isn't it?
It's not a bad draft. It's very good.
And that, that is Maddie Elliott, the director. How did you get, I don't want to say roped in, but how did you get to be in the position of the director?
Well, I think that part of it is the fact that we're married. So, you know, it's a team effort. We've been doing this for 4 years.
Oh, so that's why you guys were holding hands
here.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, excellent. We're kind of disgusting.
It's making fine. It uncomfortable for everybody. Sorry, Jack.
But I directed a play that Chris was in 2012. The Reduced Shakespeare Company presents the complete works of Shakespeare Abridged. And I really enjoy directing. I act in a lot of plays also, but... directing is fun in a different way, and so he asked me to direct this one.
Okay, and we're talking with people involved with Secret Shame at the Heartwood Center this Friday and Saturday, and next Friday and Saturday. Maddie, you said you're both an actor and a director.
And a producer.
Oh my gosh, let's just throw that into anything else that we haven't brought up.
Mother, husband, wife, friend, colleague.
There you go. Let's talk about, though, being an actor and a director. What does being an actor bring to being a director? I mean, is that important?
I think you can direct without being an actor, but I think it makes it a lot easier because you understand what actors are going through.
Okay.
You understand, like, maybe the delivery of a line or the way that you cross the stage or something like that, and the way that that can impact your other actors. And so I think, yeah, it does help a lot. There's a lot to be kind of learned from each side of it.
How much freedom do you have as a director? I mean, in terms of, might Chris say, well, that's not the way I thought the line should be delivered?
Every word is precious.
That's right.
No.
It's all poetry.
No, he doesn't take himself very seriously. I take him seriously for both of us because he doesn't. And he does give me a lot of freedom. He gives all of the actors who act in his plays, he says, you know, if something doesn't feel right, if you need to change something and make it more accessible or whatever, he's always really open to that. Although with this play, there were a few adjustments that I had to make, and I mentioned one of them to him the other day, and I could tell he was not happy about it. I got in trouble because I dropped a joke.
That's not true. You just got a disappointed look.
Ah.
That's getting in trouble.
Oh, one of those looks. And Kate, what is it like? Tell me about your character, Kate.
My character, Pat, is amazing. She drinks a lot, apparently. And because I always have a drink in my hand, but she, the most wonderful thing about doing an original play, especially one of Chris's, is as an actor, you get to develop the backstory. So my partner, Dorothy Prophet, and I really spent like a whole afternoon talking about what brought these two people to this cabin at this time, and how come after 25 years, we're finally getting to the crux of, hey, I want to, because one of my lines is, I just want to show the world who I really am. And, you know, we're our age, 60s, and we, it was a time when you just didn't come out. You stayed married, and you, and so we have the freedom to develop who we are. And so my character never had children, and she's just kind of the ornery one. Of the, hard to believe, I know, typecasting, yes. And well, I do get a swear, I love it.
Well, see, I was going to ask that in terms of Chris writes the play, and in his mind, he imagines these people moving through space and whatever, and then there's you, Kate, the first person ever to be this person.
Right.
I'd like to go back to Chris and ask Chris, how does that work? How do you get the imaginative creation of your the role, and then there's Kate. And did you have Kate in mind when you wrote it, or how does that work?
So for me, I feel bad. I hate auditioning people, partially because I'm very antisocial, and partially because, by and large, in Sandpoint, it, as much as people get mad. And oddly, people do when we, what's called precast, which is we don't audition. We just say, hey, Kate, you play Pat. By the way, it's very lazy of me that I named this character Pat. It just feels lazy. But anyways.
What did you want, Brunhilde?
I don't know. It's just one of those things where, that SNL character really ruined the name. And it's
amen on that.
Yeah,
yes.
I know, right?
Also, all of your characters have like 3 and 4 letter names.
It's true. I handwrite, so I don't have time for writing
long names.
Exactly. Okay. I named somebody Richard once just to prove that I could write it out 27
polysyllabic
times.
Polysyllabic. Whoa, boy, that Chris is picking up.
I got a cramp. Anyway, so... For me, I usually, when I write, I have people in mind. Usually, if it's adult women, it's usually Kate and Dorothy. So I usually will try and lean into writing to things that I think they can do or things that I think are funny. With this play in particular, it started as a one-note joke in my head. I was laying in bed one night and I just thought, man, it'd be funny if Kate and Dorothy dated each other. Like, I've known them both for a number of years and I just thought, God, that would be a dynamic that I would love to exploit. Like, there's just something inherently amusing in my own head about that idea. And so it kind of had to be the two of them. So again, it was leaning into what I think they can do.
Well, they are magic together.
Yes.
So it's fair.
And, the one thing that I wanted to ask that I've never asked you before, Chris, because I've been in most of your plays, is that what is it like for you when you see me bring your character to life?
It's always a good question. Good question.
It's always really fun because it's always slightly different. Because usually when I think about you doing a line, I think about you, Kate, as I know you in the real world, doing a line. But usually when you get on stage, you do something that's different and unique that's still you, but it's like, no, this is actress Kate doing an actory thing. And so it's usually a version of you as I know you mixed with a version of you that the public knows you mixed with a version of you that you think this character would be. And so it becomes this really funky and different thing than what I had in mind, but so much better. Like, just because I see it as you one-dimensionally, and then you're like, no, it can be these other things, too. Like, that time you cried when I didn't write that you cried in the script, and then you acted your way to sobbing on stage.
And it worked.
It did. People were mad at me. They were like, you made me feel things by making her cry. I was like, I didn't do anything. That was all her.
Okay, but first, I have to say that Chris Herron is the Jon Stewart of playwrights. Because he takes the most poignant topics like suicide and dying of cancer and, being gay, and he makes you laugh throughout the entire play. And so you're thinking, this is funny. Oh, wait, I recognize that. And so it's very interesting that
That's Chris's mom calling in.
Right, yeah, we're in trouble.
It might actually be. She would do that. Don't make that joke.
It was a joke.
She's sitting in her car right now listening, probably being like, can I call in?
Yeah. Kate, you've known Dorothy Prophet for how long?
Oh, my God. More than a decade, probably close to 20 years.
So has that, and she plays your significant other in
yes,
this
she does.
Play. Did that affect your performance? Have you brought things from the real world into the way you two interact with each other?
Well, the great thing about being an actor is I think in my little acting group, nobody knows me better in the entire universe other than my children than my actor friends. And so the great news is that you're very open and Dorothy and I really care for one another. And so, you know, it's kind of fun. Yes, there were a few, kind of awkward moments, but you realize, well, in my mind, it's like, well, I'm an actress. And so, you know, and I want to be true to Chris because that is the most important thing to me is that, and the director, I never argue with a director because that's their vision. And I am only there to portray their vision. But I think it's really great. Dorothy and I are having a lot of fun with it. And I'm going to be surprised about if there are nothing on the Facebook forums about me and Dorothy. I'm like, I don't care. My husband will be like, oh, whatever.
Well, I think that you, your relationship with each other has brought a lot to these characters also. Like, you guys already have a comfort and a familiarity that has made this part or these parts for you a lot easier. And watching you guys do these things and having that connection and stuff, I think brings something really special to it. And like, you know, Chris wrote the play specifically for the two of you. And like when you were campaigning and we were having some different scheduling issues and stuff, it was like, well, could we have somebody else step in for one of those roles? And it was like, no, we can't. That it won't work. It won't be what it's meant to be, and it won't be as funny and poignant and amazing as it is with anybody else.
It's tailored to her. Like, there are jokes about her being small of stature and Irish and a redhead. It would be weird if, you know, a blonde lady suddenly was
doing
that.
Can I say the line that I love the best?
Do it.
So Dorothy calls me. She says, oh, so you're a butch lesbian. And I say, oh, no, I'm too small to be butch. I'm more of a teacup lesbian. That's my favorite line. I don't know why.
It's very nice. Chris, you wrote this in 2016. I remember running into you and saying, when's the next play coming out? Like a year ago.
Yep.
And at the time didn't know. It's been a big year, though. In here in the world.
Yes.
In the real world. Has the play changed, or did you just put it on a shelf and it's coming out as it was a year ago?
It was largely on a shelf. I changed, mostly I cut things. I didn't really change anything content-wise because in spite of, you know, maybe where we are now versus where we are when I wrote it, which would have been almost 18 months ago that I'd finished it originally, the message, the things that are happening in the real world, the writing was kind of on the wall. You know, you could see what the potential outcomes were based on things that were happening at the time. And so I kind of wrote to those potentials of people who are in minority groups in whatever way, there being the real potential for those people to be further marginalized or further harassed based on kind of attitudes that were developing, or at least the attitudes that were probably always there, but the attitudes that felt a little bit more comfortable about coming out of the corners and out of the woodwork. And so I didn't really feel like I had to change anything based on anything that had happened between when it was finished and when we were actually finally able to get it on its feet, because I felt like I'd written the play with what's happened since in mind and with the themes and messages, which I don't want to make it sound too heavy-handed by saying themes and messages, because it's not. It's supposed to be funny. It's meant to be an enjoyable evening of theater with just a little bit of medicine that you have to take with it, but I try and make it a very little bit. But those things were already there, so there was nothing to change, because, again, all I really wanted to convey was that regardless of who somebody is, somebody should be able to be comfortable with themselves and tolerated, at worst, tolerated by everybody else. That was all I wanted to get across, and that part didn't change.
Who else is in this play? Who wants to answer that one? Maddie does.
So other than Kate and Dorothy Prophet, we have Eric Bond and Nicole Barato, Jeremiah Campbell, and Alex Cope.
Eric was supposed to be here. He's not.
I hope he's listening so he knows.
A discussion will be had.
Ooh.
you're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. We're here with three, well, the two of the crew, I guess, and one of the cast of Secret Shame. And we're here with the founders of Unknown Locals, who have been putting on plays here in Sandpoint for some years now. We should probably take a music break pretty quickly.
Yeah,
here.
Let's take a music break and come back and talk about Unknown Locals. And again, a Secret Shame, Heartwood Center on this Friday and Saturday. And showtime is?
7:30. Doors will be open at 7.
And tickets are available?
We do have advance tickets available at Eve's Leaves, and we will have tickets available at the door if we don't sell out.
Ah, wonderful. We're going to take a music break and come back to Kate, Maddie, and Chris. 50 years ago today, this song was a number one, and I'll talk a little bit afterwards about its global impact. The Beatles, All You Need Is Love. All You Need Is Love, absolutely, the number one song on this date in 1967. That was a song written by John Lennon, but credited to Lennon and McCartney. And they did a broadcast of it on June 25th. And I don't know, have you seen the video of that broadcast?
No.
They crammed a bunch of people in the studio, including Eric Clapton, Mick Jagger, Marianne Faithfull, Graham Nash, Patty Boyd, and they went global with a broadcast seen by 400 million people in 25 countries.
Wow.
And
was on the BBC or
I don't know the exact setup, but what I do remember is John Lennon chewing gum. You know, just very aggressively, it wasn't subtle, chewing gum while singing All You Need Is Love. And that became an anthem for the summer of love. Mm-hmm. The summer of love. And Kate does. She's too young to remember the summer of love.
I remember it. Oh, I remember it. I think when I was 11.
Okay, that's a start. You're double figures.
I thought you were cool.
I was a little older than that, sweetie. Anyway, the number one song, Hard to Believe, 50 years ago today. And we are with people involved with Secret Shame at the Heartwood Center, Friday, Saturday, 7:30. Tickets available at Eve's Leaves and at the doors. How am I doing?
Perfect.
Excellent.
Okay. And then again, it will be done again on the 25th and 26th. Let's go back to Chris and Maddie. Tell us a little bit about the Unknown Locals. Who are those folks?
So in literal terms, it's just the two of us. It's me and Maddie. But we work with so many of the same people. And so many of the same people are willing to give up nights, weekends, volunteer their time to us that, I mean, even though the two of us are the names on the bank account, I guess, technically, it really is kind of becoming this larger and larger communal thing of people who are involved in it. The funny thing is, it's the two of us that started it, but probably the person who's most identified as an unknown local by people is Michael Bigley, who's directed our two Shakespeare productions, which were Hamlet and Macbeth, and then has acted in a couple of our shows, including Waiting for Godot and a play I wrote called Your Mom. And he's the person who gets most recognized. He's like, you're one of those unknown locals, which is awesome because that's why we named it what we named it. Because A, you have to have the word local in a Sandpoint affiliation, and 7B was taken. If we could have been the 7B unknown locals, it probably would have been the perfect name of Sandpoint if we also microbrewed, but we didn't do those things.
I'd like to ask you, Chris, as a writer of the Unknown Locals for many of their productions, what is it like to write when you have an ensemble cast as opposed to just nobody in mind? I mean, knowing the people who might be in a play, do you tailor roles to them, like you mentioned with Secret Shame with Kate, or does that happen in the writing process?
It'll usually happen in the writing process if I have somebody in mind. Like I kind of said, I will try and write towards what I feel their strengths are, or write towards things that I think they can do in an amusing fashion. And then on top of that, usually the people that we choose are very funny in their own right, which is really the only aspect of the play that I care about. I don't care what you think. Did you think it was funny? Feed my ego, please.
Okay.
So the people that I write for, on top of tailoring the role to them, they're also people that I know can take the things that I write and kind of beat the joke.
And deliver them. And Maddie, as director, what's the hardest part of being a director?
Wow. Well, for me, and with the Unknown Locals and stuff, being a director is very much tied in with being a producer. And so it's kind of hard to divide those things in a way. Producer is responsible for all the money, the PR, you know, promoting it, and posters and programs and calendars and advertising.
Going on the air.
Mm-hmm. If there are costumes or set or props to pull together, that's the producer's job. Like, the director's job is to have the vision and to have the idea, but it's the producer's job to make it all happen and bring people in and get people in the seats and stuff.
Is it rare to be a producer as well as a director?
I don't know. It's normal for me.
Not for her, yeah.
I guess. I mean, I'm sure that there are other people who do it. For me, like I said, we've been producing plays together, and I've acted in several plays. So I've done the acting and producing at the same time, and I've done directing and producing at the same time. And for me, they're just all linked together, and it just kind of is what it is.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of, it's sort of like Chris creates and worries something to get down on paper, and then you take it and help to make it come alive. But then there's all the, what do I want to say, the business aspects that a producer does. And sure. I was wondering if that gets in the way of, but maybe in a small group of people like this, you're not on Broadway where there are lots of money involved and you have the different kinds of jobs.
That's true. I mean, we do, excuse me. A lot of times, you know, we keep things pretty small and simple and things. When we did Hamlet last year, that was the biggest production that we've done. We had a set and we had costumes and we had all of these things to kind of bring together for it and stuff. But a lot of times we try to keep it fairly simple. So that's true that we're not always, you know, doing big, complicated shows and stuff like that. For the most part, when I'm directing, I try to like be present and pay attention and, you know, really focus on my time with the actors and things like that. And then production stuff happens outside of that. And then sometimes, like, if I'm short on time or I didn't get something done, it's like I'm trying to email people or, post things to Facebook or something during rehearsals and stuff. But for the most part, I try to be pretty present and I try to not be too mean, but I feel like sometimes I'm mean.
Well, no. I want to ask Kate, what are her strengths as a director? Maddie's strengths as a director?
I think her strengths are bringing Chris's vision to life and really extending his vision. And she's got good eye for detail. And I think I only argued with her once this time, and it's about a towel. So, but...
Oh, the dreaded towel.
Right. I was like, I don't want to do this.
It was a discussion.
It's in the script, Kate.
I know it's in the script, but anyway. So, but she won. So I'm just saying, I really appreciate, especially in this one, because there is the female aspect to it about how women are feeling. And again, Maddie has a good eye and an ear for, you know, that doesn't sound right. Here's what it should sound like when you say that phrase, because this is what, you know, I think that you're feeling. And so she's really, really good about that. And I appreciate that very much. She's not just, I see her, one of my very favorite director of all times who did The Lady with All the Answers is Deb McShane. And so I really see Maddie becoming that way, because Deb is one of the kindest, sweetest persons, but she'll get you to do whatever she needs you to do. Walk backwards and, you know, bark like a dog. And Maddie is that way too, because I have a trust in her that if she tells me to do that, I'm going to do it, even though in my mind I'm like, okay, that sounds a little ridiculous. I don't want to do that. Right. But when I do it, it gets exactly the response that we were looking for from the audience. And, you know, and this, again, this is, you know, a poignant topic. And I do want to talk a second just about how Chris was really good about being culturally sensitive about this. He had other people read, because when Dorothy and I read it at first, we were, you know, because we're not gay and we don't have that understanding.
What?
I know, right? What? Right? You know, but I have many friends and children, right? And so we were at first, we both questioned, are you sure that you want to write this particular section right here? And Chris was, no, and I said, could we run it by some people who would understand this? And unequivocally, the people that we ran it by said, it's great. And those are real feelings. And so then I felt, because, you know, I tend to be very culturally sensitive and I don't want to hurt anybody. And so when I heard from several people that it's great, those are real feelings and that's really what happens, then I felt so much better about it. And, you know, and again, it's a trust thing with Chris. And now it was just another, you know, I gained even more trust in him. The fact that, you know, and for being an only child, he writes relationship stuff like crazy. It's so amazing. And women's roles. It's amazing.
Well, and like when we did No Service, we talked about that because it was an all-female show, and about how he was able to write these women characters and stuff. And I remember thinking, like, women are just people, though. Shouldn't we just write them like people? And he tends to do that very well. I think everybody to him is just a person. And really, he's very dialogue-driven. So I think he just writes dialogue and he doesn't think about whether it's a man saying it or a woman saying it and stuff. But I think with these topics, you know, sometimes when we have to kind of play roles that we're not necessarily representing, or something like that, I mean, we're representing somebody else's reality,
right,
and things like that. And I think that that's one of the things that as an actor we have to be aware of and be careful with and really make sure, like, are we being true to that demographic or that person or that, you know, struggle and things like that. And I think that we've done pretty well with that.
The only time I was mad at Chris, and I'm still mad at him for it, is that in the play Quick Exit, he makes me be in love with Don Johnson.
Yeah. Not sorry. I rewrote it. We're going to do that play again next year because the time we did it before, no one saw it. So we're going to do it again, and it's going to be better, and Kate's going to be in it. And not only does she still love Don Johnson, she now loves Steve Guttenberg, too.
O-M-G. Can I not give you names like Pierce Brosnan or, I mean, come on, dude.
No, you can't love James Bond. You have to love the awkward looking one from Three Men and a Baby.
hey, I like Steve Guttenberg and Don Johnson.
Thank you,
Sonny
Jack.
Crockett. He's right? Great. Yeah.
But you don't have to be in love with him.
Yeah, that's true. We are here with the Unknown Locals and, we're here with the Unknown Locals talking about their upcoming play, Secret Shame. I do want to mention that listeners should stay tuned because we have a pair of tickets to the show to give away, which we'll be doing a little later on in the hour. Chris Herron is the writer, Maddie Elliott is the director, and Kate McAllister is the star performer. I think we can all agree that Kate is really the star, the shining
She's
star.
She's always the star.
oh, my God.
Maddie and Chris, your work is just about done at this point. My
work's been done for a year and a half, Jack. Yeah.
That's true. He's got a lot of distance from this one.
So Chris is done, and Maddie, you are. It's Thursday. Tomorrow's opening night.
Yes.
Yeah. What happens tonight?
Tonight is dress rehearsal. Tonight
is this the first dress rehearsal?
This is the only dress rehearsal.
Okay.
Yes. We have what we call a pickup rehearsal next week. Before we do our second
That's
weekend.
That's what you've learned from the first weekend
right.
of performing.
Well, and it's just to run through everything and freshen up blocking and make sure everybody's, you know, got things kind of fresh in their minds for the second weekend and stuff. And it does give us an opportunity to talk about the shows from the first weekend and, you know, what went well and what we can work on and things okay. like that.
Well, I'd like to ask Chris, since his duties have been done for a year and a half, where is he going to be standing or sitting on Friday night?
I will be. I will start the show. So I'm gonna do the box office. So if you come to the show, I will be the awkward looking one handing you a program and saying thank you. And then for probably the first 15 minutes, I will sit in the back of the theater. And then after that, I will start to pace manically in the back of the theater, and I will smile when the audience laughs, and I will berate them silently when I feel like they missed a joke or didn't laugh at what I thought was a good joke.
The expectations yeah. of the writer.
And then if it doesn't go well, I'll just go sit outside.
Oh,
not that the actors won't do well, but if the audience is, all I care about is that people laugh. Like literally, like it's once a year I get a little shot in the arm of ego and people laugh at my jokes and I feel marginally validated, okay about myself.
Validated and affirmed. This is at the Hurtwood Center, a great venue, by the way, for if
it
you,
is. It's a good thing that they have durable floors though, because Chris would wear a trench in,
he goes through
in
shoes.
The back of the auditorium.
Absolutely. Hurtwood Center, the 25th and 26th, but before that, the 18th and the 19th. This weekend and next weekend, 7:30. Tickets available at Eve's Leaves and at the door from Chris. Anything can we say in closing before we move you on out to get ready for your dress rehearsal besides break multiple legs?
Yes. I think you should take the time to come and see the show. It's a great show. It's a show about hope and love and filled with sarcasm. If you don't get sarcasm, I don't know if it would be for you, but being Irish, I live on sarcasm. So I think you should.
And potatoes.
And potatoes, right. Everybody should really come out and see it. Maddie and Chris, it's a really great show, and Chris just keeps getting better and better.
Okay, and did we say that we have a couple tickets?
We do have a couple tickets, yes. The phone number, we're not going to give them away right this second, but get your...
We'll play a song,
yeah,
and then during the song, we'll take whatever caller. Like caller number two?
Sounds good to me.
Caller number two, and the number is?
265-2992. It's 208-265-2992.
Get that area code. And will the tickets be available for any night's performance?
Yes. Yeah, okay. If you win tickets, just let us know which night you want to come.
And we'll take their name and address and give it, pass it on to you folks, and the tickets will be at the door pickup. Two tickets to Secret Shame at the Hurtwood Center, the 18th and 19th, Friday and Saturday, solar eclipse, and then more on the 25th and 26th. Thank you all so much for coming in.
It's so good to see you again.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Not 50 years ago, but 48 years ago today, Woodstock ended. 3 days of peace, love, harmony, and understanding. And besides All You Need Is Love, I thought in honor of the closing of the last day, I'd love to play Hendrix's Star Spangled Banner, but we won't do that. We'll do Joni Mitchell's song called Woodstock that later on became a Crosby, Stills, and Nash part of their catalog as well. So we will take the second caller at 208-265-2992 for two tickets to Secret Shame, and you can pick your day, either the 18th, Friday, the 19th, Saturday, the 25th, a Friday, the 26th, a Saturday. The second caller at 208-265-2992. Joni Mitchell with Woodstock. But before I say a little bit about that song, want to thank everyone who called in. We did receive a winner for two tickets to Secret Shame. Once again, Secret Shame, August 18th and 19th. That's this Friday and Saturday. And August 25th, 26th, a week hence. Tickets are available at Eve's Leaves and at the door. It's a 7:30 performance. If you don't or haven't seen a play by the Unknown Locals, I highly recommend it. Let's get out and support local talent. That's very important. And I know I'm going to be there on one of the Saturdays because on the 18th and the 25th, I'm volunteering at the Panada. But real quickly about Woodstock, it was in 1969 on this date that Woodstock, the music and art fair, ended. And Joni Mitchell was not there. Her manager talked her into having to be on the Dick Cavett show. And at that time, she was having a relationship with Graham Nash. And Crosby, Stills, and Nash performed there. And so she wrote Woodstock, Long Distance. And that appeared on her 1970, her third album, Ladies of the Canyon. And it appeared on Crosby, Stills, and Nash's Deja Vu, a great album of the period. But Woodstock ended in 1969 on August 17th. Let's run through. Where were you on August 17th, 1969, Jack?
I was but a glimmer.
Just a glimmer. Egads.
I want to mention also we've got, this is giveaway day. We just gave away a pair of tickets to Secret Shame. And I hold in my hand another pair of tickets to a different performance. This one for Saturday night at the Panada, the band The Two Tracks, who will be performing with Moonshine Mountain this Saturday, August 19th at 6:30 p.m. in the Historic Panada Theater. I have a pair of tickets to give away for that as well. That'll be as...
When are we going to do that? When are we going to do that?
I guess right at the end of the show.
Probably. Or do you want to do it now while I'm reading some... of the other events, and somebody could call in, or how do you want to do
that? We could do that. I could run into the other room, answer the phone.
Okay. No, you can answer the phone here.
That'll
I'm going
to
begin talking in a second.
I'm going to turn off my microphone. This will be a first.
Yes. We will take the second caller, and the number is 208-265-2992. Real briefly, the tickets are two.
The Two Tracks is the name of the band. They're an Americana band. I believe they're a four-piece out of Sheridan, Wyoming, currently touring the western half of the country, going to be swinging through Sandpoint. I think tomorrow night they're in Livingston at the at a music festival out there.
Okay.
Coming across the state, and they are stopping
in. So this is the evening of the 19th Saturday. Two tickets we have to give away, and we'll take the second caller, 208-265-2992. And I'm going to start talking about upcoming events on this Thursday. That would be today. Tonight in McDuff's Beer Hall on Cedar Street, we're going to be hosting live music with the Tekkas, made up of Scott and Kayla, a father-daughter duo. The Tekkas have country and rock sound with an original twist. So don't miss your chance to see this Montana family band. That's at McDuff's Beer Hall on Cedar Street. And then the 17th and the 18th and the 20th, there's going to be a movie, a feature film at the Panada. It is called Neither Wolf Nor Dog, and it's based on the best-selling novel by Kent Nerburn. You need to check the Sandpoint Movies page on Sandpoint Online or Panada.org for the times. I'll run briefly through them. On today, it's at 7:30 in the evening. On the 18th, that would be Friday, it's at 5:30. And on August 20th, that's Sunday, at 3:30. The film has been getting lots of attention and excellent reviews. The Idaho Myth Weaver requested that the Panada bring this feature film to Sandpoint. It has gotten good reviews, and I'm looking forward to it. It's a Native American film, Neither Wolf Nor Dog, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Panada. Check Panada.org for the times. Then beginning this Friday through Sunday, the Artist Studio Tour, the 13th annual self-guided artist tour from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Each day features a driving tour of working studios throughout North Idaho. It's a great concept to see because most of the time artists, create in isolation. And this is a great way to see a working environment. And maybe some of the artists will share some of their secret tips. So that is Celebrate the Artistic Community in the Greater Sandpoint Area. The public is invited to visit the studios of painters, sculptors, jewelers, potters, and more. You can go to arttourdrive.org for more information or call 208-263-2161. And that gets us through today.
This is not last year, and this is not Christmas time. This is I've got Friday's events here.
And I've got some too. So you jump in and start going.
Jingle, Dessert, and Theater. Another play going on this weekend. Can that be right? This one's at the Panada Playhouse presenting Jingle. Oh, there's our first
okay,
caller.
Okay, then I'll continue with
Please
Friday.
Do.
And coming up this Friday and Saturday, Secret Shame. The Unknown Locals present Secret Shame. And that is Friday, Saturday, 7:30 at the Heartwood Center. That we had Chris and Maddie and Kate on, highly recommended. But tomorrow night, Movie in the Park. Ooh, we have the phone ringing off. We have two tickets to Tracks. Movie in the Park is going to be Princess Bride. And if you have not seen Princess Bride, it is a joy. And if you have seen it, you will well know it's a joy to see it again. The Bonner County History Museum hosts a Movie in the Park in Lakeview Park. That's right next to Veterans Memorial Field. And admission is free. Gates open at 6:30 p.m., so bring blankets and chairs. And the movie begins at sundown. And if you remember Princess Bride, that's where you get a couple famous lines. One is "As you wish," which becomes the line for "I love you," and then also "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die." It is a wonderful movie presented by the Bonner County History Museum. You can check their website for latest information, and it's sponsored by the museum, Pine Street Dental, and Sandpoint Parks and Recreation. Princess Bride, gates open at 6:30. Bring blankets and chairs, and I would say a light jacket. Also, the soundtrack, if I might put a plug in for the music, was done by Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits. And Mink DeVille does a great version of Storybook Love, one of my favorite movie songs. So that is this Friday night, Movie in the Park.
Going on, and I missed a little bit of that. I was distracted by the telephone, Jim, so I don't want to repeat what you said. The Princess Bride should be a pretty good one, and I do love that soundtrack.
Wonderful movie, mm-hmm. And it's about love, it's about fidelity and loyalty, and the framework for it, the grandfather reading the story to the mm-hmm. Child who's in bed because of a cold bug or whatever, and you really get the sense that he's trying to avoid going to school, and As You Wish.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Did we talk about the eclipse? Did you know that that's coming up?
Say what?
Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be postponed or rescheduled. I believe that on Monday, there will be a solar eclipse, which you can see from here. I believe you can see it from everywhere, but the total solar eclipse will be going on a little bit south of here, where it will become truly dark in the southern part of the state.
I think we get about a 90% eclipse.
Is it
that high?
I don't know. I'm not a master of the celestial sciences myself. Probably. I don't know.
Night they said there's an app, a free app called Solar Eclipse Timer, I think, mm-hmm. and that all you have to do is put in where you're going to be, and it'll tell you the best viewing time and how much of it you'll get to see.
Wow.
Solar Eclipse Timer.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was, as they said on the news last night. And
you know, I know I'm gonna be downtown, probably here in Sandpoint on Monday. I don't think I'm going anywhere to see it, but it'll be interesting just to see what happens at that moment. Is everybody going to run out? And
no, I'm going to be indoors. Cosmic things scare me.
It is going to be a little freaky. I mean, this is, the whole civilizations used to cower in terror.
And then you think of something like Stonehenge, and you think of something like that, and you go, here today we have telescopes, we've got viewer boxes, we've got a lot of information about what is happening, but at a time in the universe when people thought that the Earth was the center and all the planets revolve around it, this must have been a scary event where we can understand it in ways that previous generations, they would fit it in with their mythology, their religious beliefs, and it was magical, and now we're so scientific that part of the magic might be gone.
I can't even imagine what you would think. I mean, I wonder if they even knew. Would they see it and recognize? Oh, that must be the moon. Or would they see it and say, "This is the end." And then 10 minutes later, they're still
alive.
Yeah.
Whoa.
What is that?
A fake end.
That was a big bird. Hey, we're out of time. Was there anything else we needed to mention, Jim?
Outside of everyone, just there's so much going on in the community, whether it be Princess Bride tomorrow night, Secret Shame at the Heartwood Center, the movie at the Panada. Just go out and enjoy these days.
Yes, indeed. And for Jim Healy, I'm Jack Peterson saying good morning. Stay tuned for Bird Note and the Nautilus Eclectic Mix all day long here on 88.5 KRFY Ponderay.